From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Canole, California.
San Jose.
I'm from Paradise, California, up north.
San Jose. South San Jose.
Coming up, we take a spin in the car of the future.
It will know everything it needs to know. Obviously, we wouldn't allow cars on the road that couldn't tell about stop signs or stoplights or whatever.
Then we get to San Francisco the old-fashioned way.
It's the only commute that you wish it were longer.
And we'll grab the reins to tell you the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
You look out in that arena and you see the events going on. That's not just an event. That's a way of life.
Hold on to your hats. We're taking you for a ride today on Cross Currents. There's a good chance you're hearing me from your car right now. You're listening, but mostly driving. Your hands are on the wheel, eyes on the road. You're aware of the cars around you, your speed, and your environment. I know, it's really easy to take our eyes off the windshield just for a second. Despite strict laws and expensive tickets that punish texting while driving, we still do it. A lot. In 2011, more than 3,000 people were killed in crashes involving a distracted driver. More than 300,000 people were injured in those crashes.
People love to multitask, and the windshield becomes just one more screen among many screens.
Clifford Nass is an expert on distraction and multitasking, and one of the people trying to engineer us out of this problem. He directs Samford University's automotive program, and he works at the university's Volkswagen Automotive Innovation Lab. Translation, driverless cars. Automotive scientists predict similar cars will be available to all of us within the next 10 years. But that doesn't mean our problems will disappear. Self-driving cars come with their own set of challenges. To figure out what they are, researchers use a high-tech, million-dollar, lifelike car simulator. KALW's Angela Johnston recently took the wheel.
So, this is a car simulator room.
When I walk into the room where I'll do my simulated driving, Clifford Nass escorts me to a real car sitting in the middle.
So this is a regular Toyota Avalon you'll see here.
It's almost indistinguishable from the cars in the parking lot outside. But here, there is no outside. Instead, the car's surrounded by three giant movie theater-style screens.
Okay, I'll buckle my seatbelt.
To my surprise, it actually feels just like a real car. Of course, I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, wow, that's really funny. So then if you signal and move over, that works too?
Absolutely.
Wow, it's actually quite close to real.
And it feels... Exactly.
Within seconds, I'm cruising around some generic-looking city streets. Wherever I look, out the front, towards my side mirror, or in my rearview mirror, I see realistic images of roads and buildings. When I press my foot on the gas, the images start to move. Other cars pass me. Well, I guess I didn't hit the gas pedal that hard. The whole experience looks and feels real.
Well, your brain isn't built to think about simulators. Your brain is built, when it sees something, it thinks of it as real life. And so the fact that you are in a car, you're hitting the gas and brake, the car's responding totally appropriately, leads your brain to say, oh, this must be real life.
One thing that's not like real life? When NAS tests the simulator on research volunteers, they're usually covered in patches and wires and hooked up to an EEG that tracks brain activity.
And because we have the ability to measure every part of what your brain is doing, your heart is doing, your body is doing, we can get extremely accurate measurements.
There are three types of distraction he's trying to measure: manual, visual, and cognitive. Manually distracted means you're taking your hands off the wheel. Visually distracted means you're taking your eyes off the road. Cognitively distracted means you're taking your mind off the road. And texting, that's all three.
We determine what's going on in the brain when you're not just looking out the screen, but when you're thinking about the road as opposed to something else.
Studying our concentration and awareness is going to get a whole lot more complicated when driverless cars hit the road. After I get a hang of driving the car simulator through an easy course, Cliff tells me I can move on to the next level, the semi-autonomous course. Half of the time, the car will completely take over. I won't have to worry about squirrels, stoplights, stop signs,
etc., etc., etc. It will know everything it needs to know. That is important because obviously we wouldn't allow cars on the road that couldn't tell about stop signs or stoplights or whatever. And those turn out to be challenging.
And so you're driving through here, you see mountains in the back. Oh, and there's a car that just cut you off.
Wow. All of a sudden, an animated white Mercedes-Benz appears in front of me. I don't have my hands on the wheel. I grab for it and push the brake. But before I have time to slow, I realize the car has already done it for me.
So when that happens, we're very interested in your ability to react, your reaction time, and then looking at the same thing later when you've switched from autonomous mode to manual mode. How will you adjust?
There's only ever been one accident in an autonomous car, and it was when a human was driving. NASA says that's actually a problem, because they don't know what would cause the cars to crash.
If an autonomous car drives perfectly safely in autonomous mode, but drivers become incredibly unsafe, will autonomous cars that are perfectly safe nonetheless become unsafe? So it's a weird paradox, right?
After the Benz incident, the car asks me to take over. I try to be on my best driving behavior, but it doesn't take long before I let my mind wander again.
So another area we're very concerned with is the issue of... Oh my goodness. So because we were talking, just hit a pedestrian that now unfortunately he's okay.
But, while I was tuned out, a pedestrian ran into the simulated street. And this time, the car didn't catch my mistake. If this were real life, I would have hit an actual person. It's scary, and that was enough for me.
At least for the next 20 years, we're going to have a mix of hybrid, of autonomous and non-autonomous vehicles on the road, and we have to figure out how to deal with that.
NASA says one way to do this is through smart design. The lab is working with companies like Toyota and Nissan to experiment with different ideas.
We actually have a camera out towards the windshield. And if the driver starts looking at, let's say, the center panel, the thing in the middle of the car, for more than 2 seconds, a picture of the road has popped up. So you see what you see in the windshield. So the idea is, if you don't want to look where you should be looking, we'll put the road where you're looking.
NASA and the lab plan to run the simulator thousands of times on all sorts of drivers, each time getting a better look at how we interact with our cars. The hope is to make us better drivers when we take the wheel and when we let go of it. At Stanford University, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Curious to see what you just heard about? Go to KALW.org and click on Cross Currents to see video of the driverless car. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. The BART strike earlier this week left a lot of us scrambling to find a way from point A to point B. To get where we needed to go, we stood in casual carpool lines, we boarded unfamiliar buses, and braved brutal traffic on overloaded bridges. But not everybody got to work on wheels. Before there was ever BART or a Bay Bridge, people who wanted to cross the bay did it by boat. At their peak, ferries carried over 46 million passengers in a year.
The Bay Area used to be built around ferries.
Tony Brazzoni is a transportation planner who specializes in public transit for AirUp, a design firm with offices in San Francisco.
But it was set up as an integrated system with trains. So, Piedmont and Broadway up in Oakland and even Berkeley all had trains that came in and folded in at the where the Bay Bridge is now onto big ferry boats, and then everybody would come across on a ferry. I mean, the reason that the bridge was built in the 30s is people got tired of that, and they wanted, you know, they wanted direct access.
Last week, a lot of people used the BART strike as an excuse to take to the seas. Eric Samunza was one of them. We caught up with him in line for the Oakland Ferry on the first day of the strike and asked him what was different about his commute.
Definitely a lot longer, but it does give me a good excuse to enjoy the outdoors on the ferry. I think it's, of the choices available, I think it's the most enjoyable. You're not pressed on a bus or something like that.
In this story from our archives, KALW's Julie Kane crossed the bay with some of the region's happiest commuters.
Welcome aboard the Alameda-Oakland Ferry Service. Please pay close attention to...
It's a calm Tuesday afternoon on the docks of San Francisco's ferry building. A group of second graders giggle and jostle each other, excited to get on board the ferry to Alameda. Crew members greet passengers and sell tickets. On the back of the boat, a couple of tourists take pictures of seagulls and the skyline. Regular commuters stop at the snack bar before settling in for the 20-minute ride. Jack Dibas lives in Alameda and works in San Francisco. He's been commuting on the ferry for 15 years.
It's quite a bit more civilized than any other mode of transportation, I think. You're not packed in like sardines. You could actually open your laptop and work. You can talk to people, you can hear people, and there's a full bar.
That's right, a full bar. For regular riders like Dibas, getting to and from work on the ferry can be a very social scene. People know each other, they have certain places they like to sit, and they're friendly with the captain and crew.
People take ownership of the ferries in a way that I don't think they do on other public transit. It's a very much of a community thing.
That's Ernest Sanchez. He oversees ferry service between San Francisco and the East Bay for WETA.
Water Emergency Transportation Authority.
Most mornings, the scene on the bay is far from an emergency. So most of the time, Sanchez can focus on other things, like planning new ferry routes. But WETA's biggest job is to make sure boats are available in case a terrorist attack or major earthquake takes out BART and the bridges.
It could take several weeks, months, who knows, before we could be back into a situation where business is operating as normal. And during that time, we need to move supplies, we need to move people, we need to move equipment and other things necessary to bring us back into a state of operation.
It was just such an emergency that really jump-started the region's ferry service. Ridership dropped significantly after the Bay Bridge opened in 1936, and ferries pretty much died out until 1970, when the Golden Gate Ferry started service from Marin. When the Vallejo Ferry opened in 1986, its main job was to take people to Marine World, which had just relocated from Southern California.
So the Oakland A's take...
But then, in 1989, damage from the Loma Prieta earthquake closed down the Bay Bridge for almost a month. During that time, ferries were one of the most direct ways to get into San Francisco. Again, transportation planner Tony Brizzoni.
That actually got things started, got the Alameda service started, the Oakland service. It pumped up the Vallejo service.
And 1.5 million people now ride those ferries every year. It's not much compared to the 350,000 people who ride BART every day. Still, ferries are one of the region's more financially stable transit services. Ticket sales pay for about half of what the ferries cost to operate. Only BART and Caltrain have a better record.
All ashore gateway, next stop will be Oakland.
Even so, the ferry's busiest days are the ones when BART or the bridges are closed. And with the region's population expected to increase by about 2 million people in the next 20 years, planners are starting to think about the ferry's role in getting those people around. Transportation planner Tony Brizzoni says that raises some longer-term questions.
What are the trade-offs of building eventually a new BART tube or providing service, more service on buses or more service on ferries? But if you're going to provide the service on ferries, you need to make sure that people actually take it and they can get to it.
Brizzoni says it all comes down to land use and development.
So you have to look at a ferry terminal the same way you look at a train station. It has to have, it's best to have a lot of people living around it so that they don't have to drive to it and that it's an easy walk to them. And then, but on top of that, like a train station, it needs to have really good connecting bus service into it.
In San Francisco, that's easy. It's a short walk from Muni and BART to ferry terminals. But the situation in the East Bay is complicated. Again, WEDA's Ernest Sanchez.
Especially recent economic problems have seriously affected public transit. At one point, we had a good bus service to our terminals, and that is, you know, has changed.
Getting more people to ferries is a long-term challenge, but once they're there, the ferries do have one big advantage over other modes of transit. They're fun to ride. Sanchez says that enjoyment is so big a factor that when older boats were replaced with faster vessels, passengers started to complain.
Because the commute time now was like 19 minutes from Alameda rather than 27 or 28. And from Oakland, it was only 20-something minutes. And so people were concerned that they didn't have enough time to talk with their friends and hang out, or for that matter to have the additional cocktail because we do serve liquor on board. So it's kind of interesting. In the old days, when you read about the ferries, back in the heyday of ferries, I mean, that was taking an hour plus to go, and so they had card games and weddings and feasts and all sorts of things.
Regular commuter Noelle Lawrence says she understands the appeal.
Somebody said to me once, it's the only commute that you wish it were longer.
Docking at the Port of Oakland, this is Julie Kane for Cross Currents.
How did you get to work during the BART strike? Let us know on our tip line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound. We asked you to tell us what that was and where we recorded it. To bring us the answer, we sent KALW's Jasmine Lopez to an event that's been a Bay Area tradition for more than 70 years.
Hello, California! Elvis Presley, Billy Graham, Elton John, the Beatles, heavyweight boxing championships, it's all taking place inside this great building. But you know what? Tonight, it's going to be a heavyweight matchup between the Cowboys and Cowgirls and the Beast underneath them. Ladies and gentlemen, I give to you the 2013 Miss Grand National Rodeo, Missy Elliott.
My name is Missy Elliott, and I'm your 2013 Miss Grand National Rodeo Queen. We're at the Grand National Rodeo the first weekend, and we're just getting ready to start our first performance.
She has traveled over 6,000 miles, increasing awareness about professional rodeo and the Grand National and the legendary Chow Palace. One more time for Missy Elliott.
The rodeo families, they travel from rodeo to rodeo, and they all know each other, and all their kids grow up, so it's a really, really good atmosphere, and to have that at the rodeo is the best.
My name's Jenna Moore. I am putting conditioner on my pig. She is 10 months old, and she's a crossbred between a Yorkshire and a Hampshire. And she's going to be showing in the breeders' class tomorrow.
Get your rodeo jerky.
My name is Eliza McAllister. I'm a naturally born cowboy. I've been on a horse since I was 3 years old. This thing is emotional. You know, when you see a beautiful animal, it touches you.
Here, hold the horse, guys.
Nasty pound, come on. Yes, it's way on. No.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm Todd Fitzsimmons, Livermore, California.
We came out to watch the rodeo tonight. My favorite part about coming here is all of Northern California kind of converges on one area for the Grand National Rodeo. It's a like-minded way of life. We all feel this way about our livestock and our animals. You look out in that arena and you see the events going on. That's not just an event. That's a way of life.
After the rodeo, we'll be dancing. Oh, it's always good to come to California.
Want to catch the barrel races and meet some carefully groomed pigs? Get your boots on and head out to the Cow Palace. The Grand National Rodeo ends this Sunday. And now it's time for this week's Audiograph winner. Looks like we've got a champion in the making.
My name is Glenn, G-L-E-N. And this week, I think we're at the Grand National Rodeo in the Cow Palace in Daly City, just across the street from San Francisco on Geneva. Because if you're over on this side, you're Daly City, and if you're over on that side, well, you know. So anyway, Cow Palace, Grand National Rodeo.
All right. I know we got some rodeo cowboy fans, but I need to know, are there any Niners fans in the house?
Congratulations, Glenn. This is your third time correctly guessing our mystery sound, and we will be adding to your collection of KALW t-shirts. For the rest of you, there'll be another contest next week. Here's a sneak peek at next week's special Halloween mystery sound. Watch out, it's a scary one.
So what we'll do is we'll start recording, we'll ask a question, we'll wait 10 seconds, see if we got anything. So here we go, I'll start recording in 3, 2, 1. Is there anyone in here that'd like to speak with us today?
Ooh, I'm not sure I want to know what that is. But if you think you know, call 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And you may be next week's winner of a KALW t-shirt.
I thought one spring, just for fun, I'd see how cowpunching was done. So when the roundups had begun, I tackled the cattle king. Says, hey, my foreman is in town. He's at the plaza, his name is Brown. If you say him, he'll take you down. Says I, that's just the thing.
And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Rebecca Burungi, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Christina Loring, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ryan Miller, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio.
But all I had to do was guard the horses from getting away. I had
I'm standing on the mill, but you're not there.
This is the band Sage, playing what they call ukulele rock. They're playing on Sunday at the Red Devil Lounge in San Francisco. It's a Halloween show. The audience is expected to come dressed as a spirit guide animal. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.